Okay, Loic, thank you again for joining my podcast today. I'm excited for our conversation.
Thank you for having me. I can't wait. Let's go.
All right. So, like today, when people get married, we expect everybody expect them to stay together. You know, they are the happiest in the world the day that they get married. So, what do you think are the reason why the divorce rate is seems so much higher than in the past today? So, what can you think of?
I think statistically, the divorce rate in today's society is not higher than it was in the past. There's a study that say that the divorce rate in today's society is actually lower than it used to be 20 years ago, or 24 years ago in 2000. So it's not higher. The divorce rate is not higher. It seems higher because of the exposure that we have now that we didn't have in the past. So if you like in social media right now, you can see a lot of social media has a lot of exposure on what didn't go through, like a lot of shitting video, a lot of different things, a lot of negative perception of relationship in general. So it tend to make us think that most of the people that get married at some point they will divorce, but it's not the case. But if you want to talk about the breakup in general, like why do people divorce in contemporary societal standpoint? So today's, I would say there's a lot of dimension to the answer. I would say the first one might be the fact that today's most of the family live in a two household income. So it's not like it used to be back then where a woman were not good, they were housewife literally, and men were the one providing for the whole house. When it was like that, women tend to stay in a marriage even after abuse, so they didn't really have a say because they couldn't just leave the marriage because they couldn't afford their lifestyle, they couldn't bring the money for themselves. So they tend to stay in the marriage even though they were facing abuse and maybe cheating from their husband. And now women of this generation, they don't accept these things. So if things doesn't work out, they will just leave, and they will, because they can handle their own, so they can provide for themselves. So they tend to go to like literally divorce, because you can tell that the divorce rate in today's generation is like 66% higher coming from women than men. So women are the one who actually divorce the men a lot. So aside from the woman, I would say another reason is the fact that in today's society we are not that religious that we used to be, and in a religious environment it wasn't really a good it's not, people don't think about divorce literally. People didn't think about breaking up because it was not seen in a good way in the community. You know, in a Christian community, for instance, it was a failure literally. So this is another reason that I can think of, but you can add other things if you.
So I would also think that today there are many people that are getting married young, you know, that are getting married young and they are getting married soon. And for me, the problem in getting married young is you don't have enough self-awareness of what is awaiting you in a marriage. Maybe you didn't talk about how to raise the kids before you get married. You didn't talk about how to use your finances, you know, and you didn't also know fully your partner before getting married. Because I would say people are getting married soon because they want that social status of marriage. There's also peer pressure, like in your circle, you see that all your friends are married, all your close family members, they are married. And then you feel like you have to do something, you have to get married to fit in that circle that you are in, you know. And then you get married too young, like at 22, that in Western countries, even in the US, even in Europe, you see people getting married at 22 or 23. I'm not saying that it's not a good thing to get married at 22, 23 or young. I'm saying that most of those marriages are without self-awareness. Because let me tell you something. There are many people that don't know that when they're getting married to a partner, they don't fully know about their partner. Even if they ask discovery questions before they get married. Because you might ask discovery questions to your partner before you get married. And when you are that young, many people don't know themselves. So what they are going to answer is not always how they are going to act when they are going to be in a marriage. So you didn't fully assess the person you are going to deal with in that marriage. And then they are going to act in a way that you didn't expect, because you are like thinking that you are in a safe place where you ask them how they will react in some situations, but you didn't really experience it. I don't say that you have to experience all the situations that they are going through before you get married, but you have to experience at least most of your character when you are going through a difficult situation. I don't think that you went through most of the difficult situation of your life when you are getting married at 22, 23, 24. So there's that self-awareness that you don't know most about your partner when you are getting married young, and many people are getting married very young, you know. And I was also talking about getting married young and getting married soon. Like, you didn't discuss about how to use the finances in your house or your future finances when you will get rich with your partner. You didn't have that discussion. Or you didn't have deeply that discussion with your partner. Or you didn't know how your partner will be when you will face a financial crisis, or even how you will be, even how you will react when you face a financial crisis in the future. Because in the future, if you get like bankrupt in your society, if you get bankrupt if you go through bankruptcy for your company, or if you are fired from your job, the way you are going to react to it, you are not even you yourself, you don't even know that you were going to react that way, because that's the first time you're going through that situation. And your partner might not find that reaction appropriate for her. Like, she might gonna be, I didn't think that you would react this way if you were going through this this difficult situation. I didn't think, and I'm not sure that I want to deal with someone that is gonna react that way. And then those are arguments that can lead to divorce today. And I'm sure that many of divorces that are happening today are also due to young marriages, you know. So that's one of the points that I was thinking of too.
Yeah, very good point. In fact, it is proven that young marriage, so people between 18 to 34 year old, have the highest percentage of divorce of any other group age. So your cerebral cortex is not fully developed, so you tend to get married really without understanding what is it like, what is the marriage. And I would say, based on what you're saying, I would say basic incompatibility is one of the main reasons of divorce. In fact, it's 43%. It's the highest, it's the top reason of divorce, is basic incompatibility. And so when you're young, and like you say, you didn't even get the chance to really talk or to really get to know a person, you know, and then you're just rushing for marriage. And then during the marriage, you realize that the person is a different person. It's not the person that you thought the person was. Yeah. So yeah, basic incompatibility and getting married young is really something to think about. Although this generation doesn't marry young compared to the previous generation, people now, you can see, like, even in your surrounding, how many people your age are married. So you can see that it's a trend now not to rush to marriage in the early 20s. And yes, money issue is 22% of the cause of divorce is money issue, like when someone loses his job and, you know, this type of thing, or when there's a financial difference in terms of the way you see the finance should be in a relationship or in a marriage. So
yeah, yeah.
It's a big cause of divorce, I would say. So yeah. And I would say social media. Let's talk about social media, like how in today's society impact divorce. What can you say about social media?
I mean, social media portrays a fiction, you know, on how marriage should be, you know. When people get married, or when people are married, they can post some activities that and when you see, you always think that there's no issues in your marriage, or that this is what I should be doing in my marriage. They are posting things that they are doing in couple during Thanksgiving. They are posting things that they are doing in couple during Christmas, during Valentine's Day. And you are like, okay, this is how marriage should be, or this is what I want my partner to be too, with me, you know. So they are portraying their whole life to fiction. And that's a very, very bad thing to do, because if you compare, you have to do your marriage the way you see it fit, the way that is best for you. You don't need to go outside and post on social media what you are doing, what many people are doing, because they are not gonna post their arguments in social media. They are just gonna post the bright side of your couple. You are only seeing the bright side of couple online, and you are thinking that your couple should not have argument. It should always everything should always be all right. And then when in your own home, in your own house, everything is not going like you are seeing in social media, you are thinking that something is wrong or something is not going right in your marriage. Whereas that's not how you are supposed to think. You are supposed to think like, in my marriage, we are going to do things this way, even if it is the unpopular opinion, even if it is not something that you have never seen before. You have to do the way as you see fit, instead of doing the way others are doing. So social media is influencing many, many young people that don't have that self-awareness in their own home and in their own marriage. You know?
Definitely, Instagram versus reality. So expectation sometimes is detrimental to marriage. You know, a lot of women, this is more on the girl side, a lot of women sees the dream on social media and all those realist couples video, and they tend to think that there's something wrong with their husband. Like, why is my husband not like that? Why is my husband doesn't buy me flower every day? Why is my husband doesn't open the door for me every day? So this unrealistic expectation, I'm not going to say unrealistic, but it's not some of these people that portray that on social media doesn't mean that they do it all the time. They're just fishing views, you know, for the content. So people should just live their life by their motto instead of just copy and pasting what the feel-good type of video that they've seen on social media. There's always going to be a video to make you question your marriage. If you have to watch a video to literally believe if your husband is good or bad for you. So people should watch social media just for the sake of watching social media without bringing it to real life, because social media is not real life. It's a fantasy. It's just dream. It's just a dream. So yeah. Also, I would say in social media, there's a lot of trust issue that come with the fact that all these platform, Facebook, Instagram, like, who are you talking? Who are you DMing? Like those girls that you like picture of girls in bikini and stuff like that. You can bring trust issue, you know. And this is more on men. All those girls that they follow, those influencers, those pretty girls. So this can give trust issue to the woman, and that's why women like to monitor which type of content that the men are following or liking. Literally, it has created a lot of issue in marriage, even divorce. So yeah, I would say social media today has a big impact when it comes to marriage, and this is something to really talk through even before getting married, not to be disappointed in the future or end up as that type of couple that broke up because of that. So yeah, marriage is a good thing. So this is a good topic. And what advice can we give to people, like the married people, not to fall into all these things? Like what should they do differently in terms of making their marriage last like forever, like their vow it was supposed to be?
So one thing that I'm thinking of right now is commitment on listening. You know, I feel like with this high rate of divorce that we have right now, when people get married now, that they're thinking of divorce as an option when there's an argument, in the relationship. You know, if something is not going their way, because things are not always going to go your way in a marriage, because that marriage is two people. You are two identity that are different. You are not always the same in the marriage. There are many times you are different. And if you are different, that means you have two separate school of thoughts when you are in your house. So when you have those different school of thoughts, you have to acknowledge that someone can think in a different way as yours. So you have to listen when they're complaining about your attitude or about what you are doing. That's something that many people don't do. And many people don't have that patience of not understanding that the other person might really think what they are thinking, and they might be right about it. You don't have to see the world only on your lenses. You have to see the world also on other people's lenses. So when you will see many couples, when they have one, two, three arguments, they will be like, okay, this divorce, I can just get divorced and I'm done with it. I'll just look for another person that will have the same sense, that I will see the life eye to eye with. That is not, for me, that's not the way to go. There's also, when you're arguing, you have to pinpoint like why the person is thinking what they are thinking. But I will take an example. Let us say just for a small mistake, like somebody tells you, why didn't you close the fridge with this stone? Like, why didn't you close the fridge? It's not the fridge the issue here. The issue is more it's deeper than that. Because the tone they're using for this minor infraction, that means they were stacking a lot of things that they were doing, and they were keeping that in for them, you know. And stacking those this attitude for yourself is a huge mistake that you can do in a relationship, because at some point it will overflow. And when it overflows, it is very hard to go back to the state where you could take on mistakes of your partner. And you, on the other end, when you realize that it is not about the fridge, it's something deeper, you have to tell your partner, like, I didn't mean to leave it open. And then sit with your partner, have a deep conversation about what is going on in her head and why she reacts and why she reacted that way. There's also, let us say the partner says, this is the fourth time, this is the third time that you are doing this, and then you respond, I did it twice. That is putting fire on, on the oil. Because the matter here is not how many times you did it. The matter is you have to acknowledge why she is mad. And then have a conversation with the person and be like, I will do this to improve. I will not do it anymore. Or I will try to be a better person. Let us say like a general way, I'll try to be a better person. But you will see most of the time people don't have that patience. They'll be like, okay, I did it twice. I don't know why you are saying what you are saying. I did it three times. Or they will get angry themselves. That I'm telling you something, I'm complaining about something, you get angry because I'm complaining. Why is that? It's the patience. You don't have that patience. And since divorce is an option, you'll be like, okay, it's better that we get divorced so that we can avoid all those arguments. And then everybody goes their way. And I will find somebody with whom I will not argue that much. And then we'll go from there. Instead of solving the deep problem that is there with your partner.
So which message? So since we are talking about divorce and you're giving advice about avoiding the divorce, so there's a statistic that say that the gender who divorce the most are women. So 66% of women divorce, and it's even higher when they are college educated, so or when they have a degree. So the woman who has like a bachelor degree, that is like 73% of them. When they divorce, 73% of them are the one initiating the divorce. So we have 66% average of divorce that are initiated by women, 72% if they are college educated are initiated by women. Why do you think that women are the one who tend to divorce the most? What is it in today's society that encourage women when it comes to divorce that has to be them? Is it because men are the bad guy compared to women? Is it always the men's fault? What do you think about that?
Well, I think that since the women that since those women are educated, I think they will be like, okay, I don't need you. I don't need a man to do my life because I'm intelligent. I can go to work and then I can take care of myself. I don't need you in my life. Especially if they already have a kid. If they already have a kid, that's even worse. Because they have a kid, they have a job, and there's also this statistic saying most homeowners are women or something like that. Is it most homeowners are women or a single woman? Yeah. Or it's some statistic like that.
Women in general.
Yeah, it's something like that. It's like they, when they have a job, when they are very intelligent, and then they have a man that they are arguing a lot with them, they are like, okay, I don't need a man. I don't need a man in my life. I am intelligent enough to make my own money. I have my kid. Why would I need a man anymore? So that's, I'm just trying to put myself in their, shoes, in their way of maybe on how they are thinking. And they might truly believe that they are true, that they are right, you know. But for me, I think that for a household to hold, you need the parents and the children. All children needs their both their parents for a certain equilibrium in their brain. You know, they don't. I don't want to say that children just need one parent. It's unless the other parent is dead. I'm not the one that is fan of just one parenting, one person parenting. I believe that they need both, even if I understand why intelligent women might be okay when they are alone, you know.
Yeah. So I will add to that maybe there's a reward from them getting divorced. Like if a man divorced a woman, he got punished by that. What I mean is if a man divorced, let's say they have kids, the kids are going to go to the wife. The kids are going to go to the mom, so it's going to see them only the weekend. It's really rare for a man to get the kids. It's really rare. Most of the time, it's by default it goes to the woman. The kids go to the woman. So this is one dimension to that. The second is most of the time he will lose the house because the person who keep the kids has to stay in the house. So there's a lot of winning when it comes to the woman initiating the divorce. They win more than they lose, you know. So obviously they won't just divorce because they want that if there's an issue, but they know that if they actually go to the divorce, they're still winning something compared to the man who was actually on the losing side, you know. So this might be,
I see what you mean, yeah.
This might be one of the reasons why when there's an issue, women tend to be, you know, just running away faster than men when it comes to marriage, you know. So yeah, this is an interesting thing. But let's, when it comes to statistics, actually, we know in today's society, the marriage, the divorce rate is 53%. So 53% of people who are married actually divorce. But if I have to go into detail, when you are divorced and you want to marry again, you have even higher chance of divorce. So it goes to 60%. When you're in your second marriage. When you're into your third marriage, you go to 75%. So the more you divorce, the more likely you will divorce again. You know, so there's something to think about if you want to marry again or if you want to marry someone who has already divorced twice. Know that there's that pattern that you need to know or to be aware of. You know.
Yeah, because they test it. They already test it.
Yeah, they already tested. They have. Yeah. They come with trauma. They have less patience. You know.
They just be like, okay. If it doesn't work, okay, I'm just gonna go to the next person. It's not divorce. It's not an issue for me, you know. And also, you can also say that people change over the time. Well, you can get married with someone that has a personality that you like, that you fell in love with. And then over time, the person change. The person changes. And when the person changes, you are not okay with that new version of the person. So this comes down to my second question for today. But do you think that people really change, or do we only reveal more what we are over time?
I mean, there's a scientific take on that, and there's a behavioral take. I think the scientific take, people still have the ability to change, like the brain still evolve to some extent, you know, when it gathered news information, you know. So there's a study that shows that personality trait can shift up to 2% per decade. So the more you grow, the more there's a 2% increase in personality trait. So it is possible to change. You know, it's scientifically proven that it's possible to change over time as the brain has new information or your new experiences in life, you know. So like a major life event can trigger significant neural reorganization on your brain. So yes, it is possible scientifically to change, but do people actually change in terms of their behavior? It's up to you. Now that you have the information that you can change, do people actually apply those news information that that the brain has gathered for them? I believe not. I believe most people don't apply those things. So I believe it's not even the point of changing. It's more about understanding who you are better, like self.
Awareness,
Yes, having some self-awareness on yourself, you know, because 40% of behavior is habitual anyway. So 40% of what you do or your behavior is something that you have been doing a lot of time. So these patterns are difficult to actually just change like that, you know. But yeah, for me, it's more like you have to understand yourself better, understand your flaw, understand what you are good at, and try to, you know, try to be better, like try to be a better person. So I'm not gonna trust too much on the ability of someone to actually change, or you know. So this is my take. Like, I don't have too much to say about that. This is my take. What do you think?
I would say that the environment where you are in, it can make you change. Like it plays a huge role on your development, you know, because there's something, there's a concept that we call nature and nurture. The nature is the DNA, and the nurture is the environment where you are growing in. So you can have something in your DNA that was never activated. You know, it was never triggered. It is hidden. You can have a personality trait that is hidden in your DNA, and you yourself, you don't even know that you have that personality trait, that you don't know that you are like that. You know, and then when you find yourself in an environment where in an environment or in a circle of people that will activate that personality trait, become another person. You changed. You were not like that before, right? Let us say you have in your nature, you have something in you that makes you drink. That makes you a drunkard, but you never drink, but you never drank before. Didn't you drink before? Because you were in an environment where people don't drink. You are just in an environment where people don't drink, but that doesn't mean that you are not someone that will drink a lot when they will start drinking. You know, so you might live years in a home, in a house where people don't drink, or you have a circle of friends that don't drink. All they do is maybe gaming or doing activities outside. They have never drink beer, they have never drink wine, never do anything like that. You have that kind of circle of friends. And then when you move to maybe to another city or to another country, you have a new set of friends. And those set of friends, they are drinking, they are in the bar every night. And then one day, when you are like really close to those people, they are like, okay, we are going to the bar, you coming? You might say, okay, only for this night because I'm not someone that drinks a lot. And then that night, when you start drinking, you'll be like, okay, actually drinking is a good thing because I like the beer that I'm drinking. And then every day you find yourself in the bar drinking with them. Not because they are forcing you to drink, because you are enjoying drinking too. So that is something, that is a trait that was hidden in you that you didn't know. You didn't know that when you start drinking, you will become a drunkard, and then every night you are going to the bar to drink with your friends because you are enjoying beer, you are enjoying alcohol. So you change as a person. And that is nurture. It's the nurture that influenced, that triggered that side of you, and you became another person. I will take another example of nature nurture. It's like you have a group of friends. Every day you are playing soccer, or you are playing football, whatever you like. You are playing soccer, you are playing games, and you are studying. That's all you do. Your entire existence, you are 25 years of existence, you are 22 years of existence. You are just doing that because you have a circle of friends that are doing that, playing football, playing games, and they're studying for their bachelor or something. And then you find yourself in the future, you move out of that circle, you find yourself in a new circle, in a new set of friends. Those friends, they are people that want to invest, that are entrepreneur. You have your new circle is a circle of entrepreneur. So when you go home, you cannot do what you were doing before. You cannot even think about it because it will go out of your brain because you have nobody to do it with. And then you find yourself with a set of friends that are investing their money in something that is more productive than what you were doing before. And then you find yourself investing too. You are investing, you are getting money, and you are maybe, let us say, luckily, you are becoming a millionaire because you were in a set of you were in a friendship where people will make you have money in the future. And then you change. Now your mindset is making money or all the ways you can do to make money to be rich in the future. You changed. Your mindset changed. Your mindset shifted from studying in school or playing soccer every night to how to be financially stable or financially independent. That's not you anymore. You see what I mean? So that's how I think that people can truly change.
That change is mostly triggered by the environment. So we know that environmental influence about like 50% of personality expression. So it's a scientific fact that the people that surround you or your environment as a whole can really trigger a change. So the type of change that I want us maybe to go toward is a behavior that you already have and that you are trying to suppress. Can you really change to be a better person or not? Let's say you're a cheater. You know, let's say you used to cheat on your, let's say you have cheated on your girlfriend, and then she has forgiven you, and then you're trying to be, can you really not do that anymore if you're exposed to the same environment? Or so, we just revert to the person because you cannot really change?
Okay, so I said before, there's nature in it, so there's nature and nurture. So the environment can make you change your nurture, you know, but the environment cannot make you change your nature. Your nature is you're a cheater. It's not the environment maybe the environment made you a cheater, but I would say that the environment activated it. But let us take the example where it's in your DNA to cheat. I would say, if you go in an environment of people that don't cheat, that don't cheat, right? You are still gonna have it in your DNA, but it's gonna be marked. That behavior will express itself lower than when you are in an environment where everybody cheats. So I would say it doesn't go. Your nature doesn't go. That personality trait is in your blood. That's how you are. It's just that you are in an environment where you cannot practice it. So it will become mild, but it's not going away. It's there. So I would say if you're a cheater, you're a cheater forever.
So are you saying that if you are doing something that you've never done before, it means that you were already like that?
No. Like in that instance, you have to know if that is in your DNA or no. I cannot tell you what is in the DNA of somebody or no. But what I'm saying is, if some personality trait is in your DNA, you cannot change it, because that is who, that is like exactly
Yeah.
who you are now.
Yeah, because
okay,
yeah, okay. Before you continue, because there are two dimensions of that. There's a dimension where it's not inside your gender, but you've done it, right? And there's a dimension where it's inside your gender, you didn't know, and you've done it. So how do you know the difference between the two person? Like, if you say it is inside your DNA and you've done it, so you means that at that point you cannot change who you are. But if it's not inside your DNA and you've done it, you can revert back to the person you were before doing it. You can change.
Yes.
But how do you know the difference between the two person? You come back to the question: can people really change? How do you know the person who was it in your in his? Let's say I take a standpoint of someone who just met someone. How do I identify this type of person? How do I identify this person as in his DNA, and this person doesn't have it in his DNA? This person is hiding something that I'm going to expose because he cannot change, he cannot hide it forever, and this person just doesn't have it. How do I know as a person who is not the person doing it?
So how me I do it is all my friends I know the kind of person they are. And to know the kind of person they are, they don't have to cheat. They can do something similar that will indicate you that this person can be a cheater, could be a cheater. But you don't have to judge. You don't have to just assume 100% that they are a cheater if they are doing this. No, you can be like, there's a probability that this person could cheat based on the behavior, on other things that are seen towards him, you know. So you have to know the kind. For me, you have to know the kind of person that the guy is, or that the girl is, to correlate that behavior to other parts of the personality traits that someone can be. You know what I mean? So it's not like the person has to cheat for you to tell that the person can be a cheater in the future. It's like the person has to do something that might indicate you that the person might cheat if they find themselves in that situation. You know, do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely,
yeah.
Definitely. So there are cues. If you actually study the person, you can find cues, you know, that can, and then you can, from the cues, you can kind of expand to find the person through core nature. So when it comes to relationship, for instance, there's an initial relationship phase that lasts 12 to 18 months where a person can pretend to be someone, and then from that, and it's called like a honeymoon phase, like sometimes it lasts a month, sometimes almost 2 years, sometimes it lasts a year, sometimes almost 2 years, and then by that time then the brain chemistry return to the baseline. So after the 24 months, for instance, the person is really hard for the person to kind of hide his true nature, so the nature kind of surface and the true personality trait emerge. So what do you think?
The thing is, I don't believe that.
You don't.
Even if it is written on the internet, I don't believe that. Okay, it is true. You can pretend for 28 months. It is true. But let me tell you something. Over 90% of communication is non-verbal communication.
Yeah.
So you have 10% of less communication, that is actual talking. So if you are fool enough to only consider what the person is saying, that's on you, because I'm not like that. I will be this kind of person that will see how you will react to every situation that you are going through. If I'm present in that situation, and throughout those reactions of yours, I will tell the kind of person you are, or it will give me clues on the kind of person you are. It's not that you are going to tell me this, you are going to tell me that, you are going to pretend to do this. No, for me, I always pay more attention to the details of your body language,
okay.
The way you say things, the way you act, the way you do everything, you have to pay attention to it. And the way the person acts towards other people too. Look at the face, analyze the face, analyze the person like when I'm saying analyze it, I'm not saying that you have to stare at the person, you have to just look at him like no, that's not what I'm saying. So what I'm saying is you do not have to discard red flags. But that is something that many people are doing. They're seeing red flags, but they're discarding it. They're putting it away because they are like, okay, maybe I'm making it up, or maybe they will change it over time, or maybe it's just this one time. It's not just this one time. You say you saw a red flag, and you have to think about it. And you can also test the person in some situation. You can test the person. When I say test the person, you don't have to say to the person that you are testing them. You just have to do something to see how do we see, like see how do we react, or see their body language towards it. And that will give you many clues. So you don't have to wait 18 months for the person to say you something else to be like, so you are another person. No. The body language and the non-verbal communication is going to give you so many clues that you will know the person you are dealing with. You know?
So obviously this is for a person like you, but can you say the average person have the capability to really understand verbal communication that the partner expresses? Can you really say that? So this is not obviously you cannot be full because you have all those knowledge and those books that you've read about human nature and psychology, but the average people can actually be full, right?
You can be fooled, and many people will be fooled, you know. And I've read in this book, Thinking Fast and Slow from Daniel Hahneman. You will be fooled, but it depends on you on how much you will be fooled. Many people will be fooled, but they choose to be fooled.
So okay, let me ask. Oh, yeah, keep going.
Yeah, like I said, you choose to be fooled. Like I said, there are red flags that you are going to see. Like we were talking about divorce before, there are also red flags that lead to divorce. You know, that you discarded the red flags at the early stage, and then later on it stacks up, it overflows, and then you divorce. I don't believe that that's the first time you are seeing the red flags. Yeah, I won't believe it. You saw it many times, but you discarded it. Then the person that is acting that way doesn't know himself that their behavior is a red flag. You have to tell them. But you didn't tell them, you kept it for yourself, or you were like, okay, this is just a one-time thing, or this is just how they are. And that way of thinking is like 2 seconds or 3 seconds, you know, and then you discard it. You just remember of all the good things that the person is bringing to you, or all the good things that the person is. And you're like, okay, this thing that you did one time, okay, it's not relevant, or it's not important, we can let it slide. I'm not saying that you have to say everything. I'm saying that you have to think about what you are seeing. Don't discard anything you see. I believe that you need a confirmation. You can see something that is not correct and believe and be like, is it a one-time thing, or is it like actually how they are? Keep it in your mind. Don't say that they are actually like that, but keep it in your mind and wait for validation for future head flags, you know? Because everybody makes mistakes. You cannot take the mistake of somebody and be like, okay, he's like that. No, he might might be just a mistake, you know? So what I'm saying is keep it in mind, but the future red flag that you are gonna see, when it's gonna stack up, just remember that this person, all those red flags is not for nothing. Maybe there's an issue with this person. Don't just discard it. Don't just say, okay, it's not one time thing forever. No, you have to like assess the person, analyze the person, see how the person thinks, see how the person reacts to situations, and analyze it. You know, that's what I'm saying.
So you knowing all this, can you fool a person then? Or can you fool yourself?
Can I fool myself?
Let's say there's a person exactly like you, with all the knowledge that you have, that you are like a girl, a woman, and you wanted, and you, she's dating you, but she has all the knowledge that you have right now. She knows everything about the non-verbal communication. So because you know everything about the non-verbal communication, it means that you can literally be a better actor to hide those things because you know that they exist. So a
But
person
yeah, go
who
ahead.
is exactly like you and who know all those things, so who know all who know that you can actually catch her in her non-verbal expression, can she still really fool you?
Something that I love about red flag is most of them are done subconsciously. You don't even know that you
Even
are doing
you.
them.
So even
Yeah.
you don't know.
Even you are, even if it is, I cannot fully fool somebody on my red flags. That's not possible because most of the red flags are done subconsciously. You don't know that you are doing that red flags. It's something exterior that will tell you that, okay, you. Because a red flag is not always something bad that you do. It can also be something that you did that the person finds incompatibility with their personality trait. You might be someone that is outgoing, or maybe you have a girlfriend that is outgoing, and you are somebody that doesn't like going outside. When you will see a girl going outside, it doesn't mean that the person is a bad person. It's just a red flag for you. For another person, it's not going to be a red flag.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's
Yeah.
something beautiful about red flag. So when you are doing red flag, you are doing it on subconscious. You are doing it subconsciously. So it's not something that you control. It's you. That's who you are. So you are just acting in a natural way, and the other person is like, okay, this way of acting is not going with me. Or this behavior is not going with me. This behavior is a red flag for me because I don't want people like that in my life. Another person will want you in their life, but your partner
Yeah.
doesn't want that kind of behavior in her life. You know what I mean? So it's not like you will control your behavior and be like, okay, I'm gonna do everything for not to have red flag. No, that's not how it works.
So in summary, people don't really change.
No, yeah, go ahead.
Let's say in a relationship, like you have a girlfriend that she's been complaining about your behavior, like something pattern. There's a pattern recognition that she's found in your behavior that she doesn't like. She told you about it a lot of time, and you always say that you're going to change. Can you really change that? Something that is inside you, it's been inside you. Can you really change that to improve the relationship? Or even if you try, you're still going to revert to the person. Even if you change temporarily, can you really change that?
So I would say the important thing here is not to change it, is to mild it, to work on yourself for the respect of the relationship. So you have to do everything in your power to mild that personality trait so that it doesn't overflow, or so that it doesn't stand out in front of your other personality trait. That is just for the respect of your partner. So if she's saying this personality of yours, I don't like it, and you feel like that, and you know that that personality is a problem. I'm not saying that you are somebody that likes watching football or that likes start not studying, that likes doing something excessive. That is good, and she wants you to change it. You will just change it. No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, if you know that what you are doing is not a good thing,
Detrimental, yeah,
it's
detrimental
detrimental
for the relationship.
for their relationship and for any relationship whatsoever. If you know that that personality is not a good personality trait, you can work on it to improve it, so that the person doesn't feel like you don't respect her when she's talking, or when she's saying her consent. So you can work on yourself so that that personality traits it's lower than it should be,
So that means the other person has to make some compromise as well. So like you mild it, the person shouldn't just accept you to change fully. That should you guys should come to a compromise in a way that there's an improvement in the attitude that you talk about, that even you have realized that in the relationship and in the any relationship as a whole. So it's more like the question is not will that change, but rather if the person can accept you with you being who you are, knowing that you are doing something about it, you know, but not really accept a sudden change just to please the person or
There's no way there's a sudden change. That's no way. That's it's something that will take time. You know, you have to accept that the person has to take time to mind it. It's, sudden change is not possible for something that's in the DNA that is standing out. For me, it's not possible. And also when I was talking about change, I was talking about there's also events that that can make someone change significantly. I will come back to self-awareness again. Let us say you have a huge hike of money in your life. You go from very poor to very rich, and then you become arrogant. I know people will say you were always arrogant, and that the money triggered that part of you. You know,
reveal. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, the money revealed that part of you that you were arrogant. You know, it's true, but still you changed. Because that arrogant part of you were mild because of poverty. So you became another person. Even though what I prefer to say is that arrogant side of you were in you, but it was hidden. And most of the time you yourself don't even know that you will be arrogant when you have a spike of money. It's not that because I don't think that they always knew that they were arrogant when they were like that. Because when they are poor, they are like, okay, even if I have this amount of money, I will do this, I will do that. And then when they have the money, they are not doing what they said they would do. They are just spending it everywhere. They are becoming another person that even they didn't know that they can be that person. So that's why I was also talking about change. The person changed. It's changing. You change, you are not another person. Even if that personality trait, revealed, you still changed. That's what I'm saying.
Granted, the person still changed.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. Well, I guess we've covered it extensively.
Yeah, I mean that would be a wrap, right?
Yeah, you know, I believe so.
All right. Thank you again. Thank you again for meeting me on my podcast. And hopefully in the future, we'll have other interesting conversations like that. Right?
Yeah, definitely. It was really nice of you for having me. And it was a really interesting topic, man. Let's catch up next time.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.